You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
Hey, my lovely listeners, welcome to episode 52 of Atheistically Speaking with your host, Thomas Smith, as is the usual. Well, this one's absolutely full to the brim, overflowing with just bubbling with goodness and content. So I'm going to get right to it. I just got to go. Here's where we left off. So, Danielle, can I ask you how long? Okay, so it sounds like your husband and just the interference that your sponsor was having was kind of what was driving you out of it. I don't know. Did we hear exactly how that happened, when that happened, and kind of how many years it's been since you've been really involved in the program?
Yeah, so it was about 5 years after I like really started, when I got a sponsor. So again, I started going to like just meetings now and again when I was 12, and I got a sponsor and really started going to meetings regularly, like 3 times a week, and calling my sponsor and all that when I was around 15, and I finally quit when I was 20.
Oh, okay, and, so you got out of there pretty quickly. I was thinking it was going to be a longer run.
No, I got out of there pretty quickly. Like I said, near the end, my graduate classes were kind of interfering with it. And the big thing that helped me to see was that, you know, I really grew up in AA. So everyone, all of my family was in AA of some sort. And I really believed that you needed this to live your life properly, and that anyone who wasn't in it just didn't have a good life. So all of a sudden I was in college and living with people who were not in the program, and I could see that their lives were decent and they were able to, you know, live normal lives and not be affected by alcoholism, and they weren't.
That's so much
marrying.
Like religion. That's so much right. like what happens in religion.
Yeah. Right.
You know, when you go to college, you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's where I was able to see that, okay, I'm able to be successful on my own in college. I don't need this. I don't need it.
Oh, and you did mention that the guy telling you to, or the woman, I guess, telling you to not go to class. Is it always the same gender, by the way? Is that a requirement of a sponsor? What?
It's encouraged.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like encouraged, but yeah, it's not always. It generally is.
Okay, but so yeah, so your male sponsor, no, you're definitely totally male sponsor, Danielle, told you, no, your female sponsor told you to take more, take fewer classes, graduate slower, and could probably cost you time and money and mess with your life. And so that was a contributing factor to.
And well, that was kind of when I was already on the way out. Like, I think I was expressing doubts. And that was when my sponsor was like, well, you should be, you know, just like in religion, if you're expressing doubts, you're encouraged to get into it more, you know.
Right, they have to double down kind of.
Right. So that was one of the things, is you should be going to more meetings. You know, you're only making 3. You should be going to more than that. And I was like, well, I can't. And so that was the response to.
Right. That reminds me of I think. People have when Mother Teresa's like letters came out or whatever, her journals came out and talked about how much doubt she had. And then the response among the religious was like, oh, perfect. That's totally what happens. God gave her like this doubt. It's even better. Like somehow they painted into this, like it's even better that she doubted and that right. she needs to. Yeah. Anyway, so it reminds me of that kind of thing.
I told my, sponsor that I was, I didn't want to do this anymore. And, at that point they almost started playing like good cop, bad cop, where, my sponsor really started, I don't remember exactly who this was, but they kind of had like an intervention where, it was several different women in Al-Anon that, talked to me. And one of them was definitely saying that, you know, just kind of threatening that your life is not going to go as well if you leave this. And there had always been these stories that we would tell ourselves of like, oh, you know, there's so-and-so, she left AA and then her husband got drunk, or there's so-and-so, she left, or not AA, she left Al-Anon, or she left Al-Anon and then, you know, she and her husband divorced or whatever. I keep using she for this. Al-Anon tends to just be almost all women. There definitely are some men in it, but it's probably like 90% or more women.
Wait, and this is your, this is, I'm sorry, I may be getting confused on the terminology. That's Alcoholics Anonymous in general, is, or is
no,
that the...
No, Al-Anon, like, yeah, I don't know why they pick such confusing terms for this. AA is for alcoholics. Al-Anon is for friends and families of alcoholics. The official name is Al-Anon Family Groups.
That so is just in... terribly confusing. Okay.
Yeah.
Most AA is like predominantly male.
I was going to, that was going to be my guess. And then you said yeah. Al-Anon
like
was
65% or something.
Yeah.
Okay. That's okay,
so
that's
yeah. I had one woman who came and told me like basically she warned me like, you know, people who turn away from God and who don't have as much God in their life, their lives really go downhill and you will not, you know, that's where the insanity comes in and your life is going to become unmanageable if you aren't working this program and staying in step with what God wants. So that was kind of the confrontation I was given. And I still decided to go through and leave Al-Anon. And, you know, that was such a hard decision to make because, like
well,
I was saying,
a huge
before,
part of your life for
right.
Really
like they really were my family. You know, we had
this is exactly like
line.
Harley as a Jehovah's Witness. It's like the same thing. That is so crazy.
Yeah. So, and then at that point, I really have not talked to anyone from Al-Anon since then. Like it just really was completely cut off. At the time, I didn't intend that. Like, I expected that I would still kind of remain in contact with some of them. But it just, yeah, they did not contact me at all or return calls, and it just kind of ended there. Every once in a while, I'll still get, and this is kind of creepy, is a few of them will still call me, and it's kind of a like, how's your life going? Do you want to come back?
So how's and, that working out for you? I get that sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
So
for you?
Sorry, Danielle, and did you, forgive me if you already mentioned this, but did you still believe in God at this point when you left, or?
Yep, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, so, wow, so that's even harder, really, I mean. Yeah. It seems like it might be easier if you sort of lost belief and then were like, oh, okay, well, then I'm not going to be in this group. But okay, interesting.
Right, yeah, so I still believed in God, and I was pretty determined that, you know, I would not let God out of my life, that, you know, I would still live my life according to God, but just not be an Al-Anon. So I started, like, I joined the religious group on my campus at school and started getting involved in that. And, but
like, I need someone to tell me what to do, please.
Right. Exactly. So, but because I had been raised with just, you know, AA and the 12 steps and Al-Anon, this is the way to live your life. You know, all of a sudden I was proving that wrong because my life was not going poorly. So, if that was a lie, I started looking into what else could be. Wow. And that's when I started losing my faith in God.
Wow. And is your husband religious, or was he, or how did that go?
He wasn't religious. He just kind of hadn't really thought of things.
Oh,
so
okay.
He kind of, you know, really realized that he didn't believe in God either about the same time I did.
Oh, that's good. Wow. Has Danielle's experience changed any of your opinions, Mike, or what has that made you think about? Because it's definitely been different.
It's definitely made, I mean, I don't really know anything about Al-Anon, but I kind of want to know more now. Like I said, I don't know if, you know, if that's the norm or not, because there's definitely like meetings and groups that are wackier than others. And that sounds pretty extreme.
And I think it's really a regional thing because Yeah, here almost everyone is as extreme as I am. And for example, I've heard some other people who have said that, you know, it was really a lot less less extreme. And, people who are saying that, it's just a place that you go for a few years until you feel better, which definitely that was not our belief. Our belief is you have to go for the rest of your life.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely like I try to, you know, tell new people who are skeptical of the whole thing, you know, there's plenty of like nut jobs that you'll meet in AA, but for the most part, you can, at least in this area, you can find just cool people who just want to help you out, you know, just help you stay sober.
Yeah. Well, did either of you, have either of you had any experience with secular groups? There are a few,
Well, I've
let's see, secular SOS, that's what it is. Secular Organization for Sobriety.
Like Smart Recovery or something like that.
Yeah.
There's only a couple around here, which is weird because there's like a billion AA meetings in Baltimore. I don't think I've ever been to one. I've definitely been to like agnostic AA meetings, and like I tend to gravitate more towards those type of meetings where like nobody's taking the God stuff too seriously.
Right.
But I don't think I've ever been to any meeting that's not AA.
Okay. And you, Danielle, have you ever looked into
No experience.
Okay. Well, and also it sounds like I'd be curious what SOS or another secular group's stance is on your situation, Danielle, as never having been an addict. I mean, do they even... I'm kind of wondering what would be
it sounds like you need a recovery group for people who got hooked up with weird recovery groups.
I was going to say that earlier. So you joined previous Alcoholics Anonymous or something. Yeah.
Well, I definitely know that, even in, just kind of, like therapists or rehab, stuff like that, they definitely encourage families to go to Al-Anon or other support groups.
Yeah, that's the weird thing.
Yeah, which I wouldn't. If I were in your area, Danielle, I would think that's like borderline, like criminal to tell people to go to those groups. I mean, it's one thing if you're where Mike is and it's a little less, you know, crazy, but man, one more thing. If I was thinking about it when you're talking about the group you were in. And if someone just asked me knowing nothing about this, like, oh, what would you think the recommendation would be for people maybe in families or with parents who are alcoholics, but who are not alcoholics themselves? I would say, oh, I don't know. Maybe you say like, hey, I'm here if you need to talk to me, you know, or like, here's a couple resources and maybe you should go to therapy occasionally to help you out. But I would never say, oh, you need to go to this group. You need to go 3 meetings a week. You need to wear a skirt. You need to like all this stuff. That's just insane to me.
Especially if it's a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The guy has to wear a skirt. Yeah. That's it. Look, it's a tried and true method. It's yeah.
And I have experience exactly with that. One of the things that I was directed to do when I was a teenager is go around to all the local high schools and tell them about Alateen. And I ran some meetings out of public high schools, some Alateen meetings. And I was in contact with the counselors, the student counselors at those high schools. And they would often give me names of people, and I would go to their houses, pick them up, and take them to meetings.
Man.
So that's definitely something that happens.
So like I said, I mean, if the secular recommendation can't be that. I mean, there's no way. I'm really curious.
It is kind of weird. Like, from what I remember, I mean, maybe stuff has changed in the last 11 years, but it's weird how, like, you'll be at the hospital or, you know, be talking to doctors, you know, and everybody's saying you got to go to AA when you get out. You would think the medical community, especially like in like kind of a northern liberal state, would, you know, have like a different recommendation than. But I remember even like counselors that I remember having like one like counselor who kind of thought it was bullshit, but like was like, well, but that seems to be the only thing that works.
Yeah, and let me say, go ahead, Danielle.
One of the things I sent you. I don't know if you want to play it. It's a little long, but it's the executive director of the National Association of Alcoholism Counselors or something like that. I forget exactly what it is, but it's, you know, the National Association for counselors who are counseling addicts. And she very explicitly says that the most important thing for an addict is that their family goes into recovery and that their family gets help.
Wow. Let me say just before, yeah, I'll play that one before I lose my thought, though. I was going to say sort of similar to what you just said, Mike. My experience, my limited knowledge of this has been, I grew up listening to Loveline a bit, and I'd hear, you know, right. Dr. Drew talk about it, and he actually would always say, because he's not really religious that I know of, but he would always say, it's, you know, you don't really need God. It's just the one step is like, you know, give up to a higher power, but the higher power can be not God. It can be something else. And so yeah. That was always my understanding of it until I think early on in this show, I think one of the first episodes, I remember why, but we looked at the 12 steps and they're like God, 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 God. There's like very few that aren't God related.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I will give it is that for something that was made in the 40s, like they are pretty progressive as far as like, you know, your God is your God and you don't have to call him God. They were Christians that started, but they were like very adamant about it, you know, being whatever you decided God was.
And that was, I listened to Bill talking about why they changed that, because originally it was very explicitly like God.
Right.
And they wanted to make sure that it was not exclusive to Catholics. So right. That was one of the main reasons. The other thing is they had one of the first members of AA was an atheist. And so they
killed him pretty quickly.
So this is another one of
shot.
Yeah, this is another one of the recordings I found, but again, it's pretty bad quality, but they weren't sure if they were going to allow him to be in AA or not. And eventually they let him be in, and they just kind of hoped that he would, you know, get drunk again and find God, which he did.
Really? Wow, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
They would hope he would start to believe in God.
Right. He did. He did start to believe in God.
So was this one of the ones you sent me?
Yeah, this was one of the ones I sent you. And
one of the three. So should I play it or?
It's not one of the three.
Oh, okay. Okay. Never mind. Go ahead.
The conclusion was just, you know, it's good that we say God as you understand him. Otherwise, it would be excluding these people who need help and then later find the God we're talking about.
Yeah, but okay. So if I go through these steps, step one, we admit we're powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Already, to me, that sounds kind of weird, right? I mean, isn't the whole point that you want to take some power over alcohol?
I mean, honestly, there is, you know, like I said, there's parts of AA in the big book that I do think were pretty powerful for the time they were written. And I do think this idea that certain people can't drink alcohol is like kind of revolutionary for the time.
Well, that's fine. Okay, sorry. First off, let me say this is current. I mean, they would revise
it. But I mean, it was written, you know, 70 years ago or whatever. But I'm just saying, I do agree that it is, I do believe it's true, and it's been kind of proven that certain people just can't drink alcohol.
Okay, like so that's interesting. Not how I interpreted it, but I'm sure that I don't have the best interpretation because I haven't gone through the program. So you interpret step one as saying there are certain people who just can't drink. That makes a little more sense to me. Mm-hmm. All right, I guess I could go for that. Sorry.
For me, since I was, you know, doing this in Al-Anon, it was literally that I was powerless over alcoholism, the disease, and that my life had become unmanageable. Like my life, I could not manage it on my own.
Well, that's a little weird. I mean, I like the first step. I get that you can't control, you know, your mom or whatever. I understand that. But why is your life necessarily unmanageable?
If it wasn't unmanageable, why would I be there?
Isn't that sort of like religion where it tells you the cure?
Yep.
Sorry, I didn't hear Mike. What? Was
that's all right? Wasn't important.
Oh, I thought I wasn't sure who Danielle said yep to. Yeah, isn't it sort of like in religion where they sell you the cure to a disease that they make up? I mean, doesn't it sort of sound like that? I mean, what couldn't it be that you have an alcoholic mom, but that, you know, your life is pretty manageable? Like, isn't that an option, or it just has to be unmanageable because otherwise you wouldn't need to be there, I guess?
They kind of try to take a stance on this so that they can back out no matter what, where they will, you know, sometimes say, you know, really everyone who is in a family with an alcoholic should be going to Al-Anon. But at the other hand, they'll, you know, say like, oh, there are some people who get along just fine. You know, I'm not one of those people. Yeah. But it's kind of this backhanded, like, peer pressure thing, usually.
Yeah, right, because they're sort of pressuring you into not sounding better than them, right? They're sort
right,
of saying, yeah, interesting. So if you don't mind, I actually kind of want to go through these a little bit because they're really interesting to hear your guys' perspective on them. Number two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, I believe Doug Stanhope's joke is that, like, okay, can my power be alcohol? wouldn't apply that to all these steps. But yeah, that, why does it have to be a power greater than yourself? Why can't you restore yourself to sanity? Does it have to, you know?
It's, well, because the first step that it says our lives had become unmanageable. Well, if it's unmanageable, then you can't manage it yourself. So it has to be a power greater than yourself that has to manage it.
Well, I rejected that first part. So there you go.
There you go. Really?
So, like, sorry, I addressed, Micah. I guess, half of the first step would kind of be like, you know, I'm somebody who can't moderate alcohol.
Sure.
But the other half is kind of like, I can't stop drinking, too, you know, like an obsession. You know, like, I don't know what's going to happen when I drink, but then I can't stay sober once I sober up. And I think the idea is that only God could keep me from taking another drink.
Yeah. What is the, so how did you think of step two, Mike?
I didn't really think about it all that much. I mean, even in those days I was taking it with a grain of salt and I was just kind of like, okay, I'll just trust in whatever, you know, like, you know, the sponsor I had was pretty relaxed with that type of stuff. And I think it was just kind of like, I'll just do it and then we'll just see what happens, you know? And it, I mean, what really is there to do there other than just kind of say like, okay, I'll believe in a higher power.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So I guess my purpose in reading through these is if one wanted to say that the 12 steps are, yeah, they have some religious parts, but they don't have to be, that would be fine. But when I'm reading these, and honestly, that's how I always thought it was, just based on hearing about it. It's sort of like the Bible. When you never read the Bible, you think it's right. One thing, and then you read it and you're like, holy shit, what is in this thing? When I read these, I think it's a little bit disturbing and sort of negates the whole thing when you look at how much you would have to ignore as an atheist.
Right.
Like I said,
yeah,
I mean,
you would. I mean, pretty much everybody just shoehorns in like, you know, I'll make the universe my higher power, you know, something like that.
Yeah. And again, if I was trying to be perfectly fair and I would have thought, okay, if you only have to ignore like a couple language things, no big deal. Like right. If these are the best steps to get sober, then they're the best steps. But when you have to ignore like huge parts of it, it's like, okay, maybe there definitely needs to be a better option. And this shouldn't be something that government is ever recommending or sometimes don't they enforce it? Like, don't they make you go?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a big debate on that. Like some AA groups are against that and feel like, you know, like they won't sign the slips. There's like a big slip signing controversy. But yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, so number two seems like you had to pretty much ignore that, and I would kind of agree. Danielle says, sorry, go ahead.
Well, like I said, today I do, because today I just look back and say, well, this is helpful to me and this is not, and I just don't care. But at the time, it was just kind of like, okay, I'll be open to this idea of like a higher power, like a spirit of the universe or something like that, you know.
Now, number three is great. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. And then there's the italics, like to sort of emphasize like how evolved they are as we understood him as the italics. Like that's the part they tacked on at the end. Like, oh shit, we want to make sure this is like kind of cool for everybody. So as you understand him, and it's like, oh, okay. But still, do you turn your will and your lives over to something else, even if, like, what is the atheist version of that?
I mean, it is, like, kind of just, for me, it was just kind of, like, made the decision that I'm going to try to really do the right thing with my life, you know, try to be a decent human being and clean up the wreckage of my past, and just kind of go.
Now, keep in mind, Mike, I'm really not trying to, like, criticize you or something. I don't mean this to come off as, like, what were you thinking going with these steps? I think that
you're a total piece of shit, Mike.
No, I think that you did a great thing in finding, you know, what you needed to out of this to get sober. And I'm not trying to take that away from you at all. I'm just, if this were me, like, if I'm just trying to put myself in it. Honestly, I don't know that I could even go with this. Like, if I had an alcoholism problem, which I'm working on, I'm trying to develop one as best I can. I honestly don't have a lot of time to have an alcoholism problem. You know, it's something I can.
If you're really passionate about it, you would make time, Thomas.
Yeah, God, you know, you're right. These are the kind of things. Can you be my sponsor to become an alcoholic? This is the kind of advice I need. Yeah, if I did that and went through one of these programs, like, cool. To me, I would want to say, okay, number three, I'm not going to turn my will and my life over to, like, some higher power. Like, I.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't expect you to. Neither would the 32-year-old version of Mike. I'm talking about myself in third person now.
But, I was going to say, who's this Mike guy?
When I was 21, I guess I was, like, even though I was atheist, I was still, like, I don't know. I was, like, I guess a little new agey or whatever, at least open to that.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I'm saying is I really think we need a secular version of this.
I try to pass that on. Like, there's a lot of good stuff that has really changed my life a lot in the steps, just as far as, like, you know, like I said, just trying to be a decent human and how to go about that. But, is it even really necessary to stay sober? You know, that's kind of another debate, I guess. Like, why even have the 12 steps for sobriety, you know?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I can understand there's a, you know, it sounds like you had a problem.
Yeah, I did. I did. But did I stay sober because I got invested in the steps, or because I just finally had enough and realized that I needed to not drink and had the support of, you know, a lot of people that I met at meetings?
Yeah. And like, number four here looks okay. I mean, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. That, okay.
Can I add something to step three?
Sure.
Please. I wanted to read, the third step prayer, because that was really important. For me. Yeah. I was required to say the third, seventh, and 11th step prayers every night before bed. And, I actually had, what was called a God box, and it was just a little box that sat on my... Oh, did you have a God box
too? No, but I've heard a lot about it.
Okay. It's a box that you put on your bedside stand, and you're supposed to write what you're giving up to God and put it in the box. And then God is supposed to take that away, and then later you're supposed to be able to open...
So your mom comes in the middle of the night and...
You leave the dollar.
Yeah. Later, you're supposed to be able to open it up and look at these, you know, things that you wrote and be like, oh, yeah, look, I don't even care about these things anymore. You know, God's removed them from my life.
That is actually kind of a good practice, though, to, like, write down stuff that you're worried about and look at it 2 weeks later and realize that it's not that big of a deal. But,
well, in my case, what I would write in my God box, you know, because of the third step, was my will. So every night I would write my will on a piece of paper and put it in this little box. And I'd say the third step prayer, which is, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. So this is kind of the just extreme, and this isn't extreme. This is written in the big book. Like, it says this right after the 12 steps, how to say, you know, this prayer.
Yeah, I was down on my knees with my sponsor, holding his hands, doing it in my mom's living room.
Yeah.
But I do want to say, like, one thing, like, you know, I do think it is obviously, like, what you went through is, like, way extreme. And the program itself is kind of too extreme for me. But I do think there probably are people that, like, really need, you know, this intensity, this like complete, you know, giving themselves away to this, you know, idea of God or whatever. Like, you know, I don't want to sound like I speak for everybody. You know, I mean, some people probably do need like meetings every day and need to be invested in it hardcore. But I just found for
but
me.
But do you think they need? So you think they need like this God concept as well?
I don't. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it seems like some people.
Yeah.
It seems like some people maybe do need like super intensive, like borderline culty. Yeah, because like heroin addicts that have been using for decades and can't stay sober and need like that daily, like vigilant, like constant, you know.
Well, you can have something that's daily and vigilant that's not like nuts, you know, cult religious, right? I guess one thing I was thinking about, and this, I mean, maybe this is obvious, but why can't we have it so that the 12 steps are completely without God? And then if you want to you put your concept of God in there on them, that's fine. But the idea that it's the opposite, that like, oh, it's going to be all about God. And then if you want to put your atheist version of God in there, then you kind of can.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'd be down for that.
All right, let's do it. Changed. Yeah, and Danielle, I was going to say, too, that I find that message just, you know, ridiculous, harmful, backwards. Like, you can't give your will up to God. That guy doesn't exist. Like, I don't know what the atheist version of that is, because we don't, even if you're religious, we don't know God's will. We know what, like, some people have told us God's will might be.
Right,
like, how do you...
So- It's your sponsor, you know, like, oh, I mean, yeah, because you don't, yeah, like you don't hear God when you're praying. So you either come up with this idea that you're pretty sure that's what God's saying, or you.
Which is your will. So you're giving right. your will up to what you think your will should be.
Right. Or you just listen to what your sponsor says, which is basically what that means.
Yeah. So that's insane. I don't like that. So admitted to God. Number five is admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. The exact nature of our wrongs. I guess that sounds okay, except that, you know, obviously can't admit stuff to God, but
yeah, for then this also was not a good experience with me. Uh-oh. Because, you know, I was doing this when I was 16. So I was, you know, I came and in the big book, what are the three categories, Mike? I forget. For the
He doesn't know shit about the big book. No, I'm just kidding.
It's like fears. Yeah, fears, sex, and something else.
Yeah, fears, sex. Oh, I guess financial under fears. I can't remember. It's been so long.
Okay, but anyway, these three categories, and sex is one of those. Maybe, I don't know. But so I was 16 coming up with a list of all these things that I had done that were supposedly wrong. And, you know, at this point, I hadn't done anything. I was a straight A student and just, you know, living a normal life. So the things that I was coming up with were like, oh, I didn't do my chores this one time, or, you know, whatever. And that really, you know, they made a big deal out of these, you know, where I had to make formal amends and go up to different family members and say, I was wrong. Yeah, so, you know, I had to come up with a list of these people and make amends, basically.
And she's not even an alcoholic.
Right.
Oh.
So yeah, this is
pretty insane.
Yeah. And, you know, this is where it's really a problem when they're targeting children like this, because they've got, you know, you've got Alateen for teenagers, which I see pretty predominantly, because that's been around since, I think, 1959 or something. And, where I was, we also had Alakid and Alatot. So Alatot was basically a daycare. But Alakid, I remember there was like a 6 or 7 year old kid who had a sponsor and was, trying to take her own inventory and come up with people that she could make amends to.
That is insane.
Yeah. So this is the type of thing where, you know, again, like, I don't have problems with religion if it's just some, you know, person who believes things and is practicing them for themselves. But when they're trying to push this onto children and, you know, push this on other people, that's when I have a problem with it.
It's not even so much like religion as in belief. Like, it's like an actual program of,
yeah, it's like dogma of any kind.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's getting people to do stuff. Like, it's not
that's
just
dogma.
Like, Okay.
Like rules and crap that you're just enforcing upon people for, right. You know, for no really good reason. Yeah. And so number six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Yeah. Or you can try to work on them, right? Well, how's God going to do that?
Yeah, it was pretty funny with when I was going through this, because for steps, the first five steps, it's a lot of like writing, you know, and you're kind of, for me at least, we were instructed to like write about them and kind of, you know, work on the steps. Whereas six, it was like, okay, so are you ready to have God do this? And then it was just kind of like wait and you know, wait for God to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I think they almost like just added in an extra step there just to make it an even 12.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, well, it kind
of
seems like
11 is the number of the beast or something. Yeah, I don't know.
The steps originally came from the Oxford groups, which again were like a Christian group, and they had six steps. So yeah, Bill kind of came up with more, and he was very impressed that it ended up at 12 because that was, you know, the number of disciples of Jesus and stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I think it's like 7 and 8 that are pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah, well, 7 is okay, so 6 you have to get ready. You know, prepare to have God remove. And my argument would be if I was in this program, I'd be like, "Dude, I'm stuck at 6 cuz like God is not removing these defects." Or sorry, I guess it would be 7 because 7 is humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings.
Well, it like, doesn't say anywhere that he actually did.
Oh,
you just
okay.
Have to get ready and then ask.
Right. Okay. So you just have to get ready and ask. So he never actually has to follow through. God doesn't have to do a whole lot in this thing. You know, they don't ask much of him. I would have had step 8, like God totally cures you.
Yeah, where's God's part?
No, yeah. I'd be like, well, you just got to get past step 8, guys. Yeah. Yeah. It's like 6 and 7. You're right. They're sort of the same. It reminds me of like, you know, Spaceballs when he's like, prepare to move forward. It's like, what's with the preparing? You're always preparing. Anyway, number 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Okay. Not bad. That sounds like something you took to heart, Mike.
Yeah. I think that was a good experience for me. I think I probably took it a little too far. Like I was like, going into restaurants I used to work at and paying them like $4 for the ashtray I stole and shit like that. But definitely like actually, you know, going to the people that I had avoided and was scared of and, you know, just felt guilty about. That was a pretty great experience.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that, Daniel?
Well, I pretty much already said that for me, it was pretty much, you know, going up to my mom and my dad and, you know, the rest of my family and telling them that I was wrong for making mistakes as a kid, because, you know, at that point in your life, you've really not done anything that much. And yeah, I think it's definitely a good thing, you know, when you're living your adult life and, you know, have done something legitimately wrong. It's great that you can, you know, go and, you know, make up for those wrongs. But yeah, when it's directed at a child, it doesn't make any sense.
And 9 is pretty good. It says, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. That's fair. I was going to say, like, well, sometimes it can be a little selfish when you're doing that. But I guess if they add the stipulation, like, oh, okay, except when,
right.
You know. So that's all right. I can live with that one. Number 10, continue to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Sounds okay. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. I thought they had a contract.
Binding contract.
Yeah. Well, it could have been. Does that sound that out of, you know?
No, that could definitely, I could see that being in the big book.
Yeah. Meanwhile, with your God box and like your contract that you dip in there for God to sign and then return to you.
We're renegotiating right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really working on my contract.
I'm going to a different higher power.
I'm going to hold out. Yeah, exactly. I've got free agency coming up in my contract with God. So, yeah, I'm going to see what I can get on the deity market, see if any other deities kind of.
There's a lot of good benefits.
Yeah, yeah. As we understood, in praying only for knowledge of his will. Yeah, good luck for us and the power to carry that out. And number 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, Steps with a capital S, too. That's kind of weird. It sounds really religious. We tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And that's, so, there you go, evangelizing, kind of.
Yeah, so a little bit with the history of AA. What happened was Bill W., he was having a hard time getting sober, and he ran into his childhood drinking buddy, or not childhood, you know, school drinking buddy. And yeah, and his drinking buddy was sober.
Played
by
Gary Sinise in the movie.
And
wait, there's an actual movie?
Yeah, James Woods played Bill.
Ebby.
Yeah.
What? Hold, okay, someone actually explain all this. There's a movie called, what is it called?
How is this that unbelievable? Yes, there's a movie, and there's actors that play them, and those actors are Gary Sinise.
But it was like a major movie, like an actual, I would have pictured like a low budget, like, but it's actually that interesting of a story?
I don't know. I definitely don't remember it coming out in theaters, but I mean, it had these big names.
Huh. They must all have been in the program.
Probably.
Oh, okay. Sorry to interrupt. Go on.
That's okay. So his drinking buddy was sober and basically was like, oh, I found religion. And it was the Oxford groups that he was involved in. So at that point, Bill basically had what he called a spiritual experience, and they changed it to be a spiritual awakening because for some reason that's a big difference. But he basically had this really big revelation where he felt the presence of God and, you know, saw God, and he came to his doctor and was like, what is this? Am I just hallucinating or crazy? And his doctor said, no, that, you know, I've heard of this before. Yeah, you probably found God or something. I don't know what it is, but
I remember this from medical school.
Right. Just take it and, you know, go with it. So that's, you know, that's really a key of the 12 steps, is that you're supposed to find, you're supposed to have a spiritual experience or spiritual awakening, which allows you to get sober.
I think it was something where, like, originally they thought everybody was going to have like a white light moment like that, like he did.
Yep.
They did the steps.
Yep.
But then they realized not everybody has that, so they kind of altered it to like a spiritual awakening over time type of thing.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a spiritual awakening may include like actual just waking up. Like that counts as part of it. Yeah.
Right.
Make it more and more flimsy. Yeah, gosh. And okay, where do we want to go from here? I do want to play those recordings. There's two more. They're short that I didn't get to, right? What do you think we should do, Danielle?
Yeah, sure, that's fine.
Okay, which one do you want to introduce one of them and I'll play it? Or?
Yeah, sure. You can probably do the Clancy one first. Okay. This one, Clancy, first he reads a letter that was written by Bill W. And this this letter is actually on the FAQ page of like the AA official website under Why Do We Say the Lord's Prayer in Meetings? So after he reads it, he then goes on to kind of give his opinion on the situation and a little bit more history into it.
And do you know when this was? Is this the same kind of time frame?
Yeah, like 10 years ago or something.
Okay.
Again, like, you know, Clancy, he speaks all over the country and the world. And like I said, there was a meeting nearby that would fly him out every year. And he literally gave the same speech every single year. You know, he tells the same things over and over and over again. It's not really evolving.
He's got to get new material. Yeah, all right. Here, let's play that one.
This is a letter Bill Wilson wrote in 1959 to explain why we say the Lord's Prayer. Now about the business of adding the Lord's Prayer to each AA meeting. This practice probably came from the Oxford groups who were influential in the early days of AA. You have probably noted in AA Comes of Age what the connection of these people with AA really was. I think saying the Lord's Prayer was a custom of theirs following the close of each meeting. Therefore, it quite easily got shifted into general use among us. Of course, there are always those who seem to be offended by the introduction of any prayer whatever into an ordinary AA meeting. Also, it is somewhat complained that the Lord's Prayer is a Christian document. Nevertheless, this prayer is of such widespread use and recognition that the argument of its Christian origin seems to be a little far-fetched. It is also true that AAs believe in some kind of God, and that communication and strength is obtainable through His grace. Since this is the general consensus, it only seems right that at least the Serenity Prayer and the Lord's Prayer be used in connection with our meetings. It does not seem necessary to defer to the feelings of our agnostic and atheist newcomers to the extent of completely hiding our light under a bushel. However, around here, the leader of the meeting usually asks those to join him in the Lord's Prayer who feel they would care to do so. The worst that happens to the objectors is that they have to listen to it. This is doubtless a salutary exercise in tolerance at their stage of progress. Now, they're talking about the Serenity Prayer, this non-religious prayer. This is the Serenity Prayer. If some of you know where it came from, was written by a Christian theologian in 1935, printed in a Christian magazine, and somebody in the Oxford group noticed it and clipped it out, 1935. And they gave it to Bill Wilson, and he liked it. But here's the Serenity Prayer, as written. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting the hardship as the pathway to peace, taking as Jesus did this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that Jesus will make all things right is surrender to his will. That I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him forever in the next. Amen. Now that's what I call a religious prayer. But it isn't a religious prayer as far as we're concerned because we take part of it. But there's nothing in the Lord's Prayer, there's nothing in the Lord's Prayer that I can think of that's not in the 12 steps of one form or another. And these people, they're just people who come to A and want to find things to screw up, carp about, and whine about. I know that when I go to meetings where they don't say the Lord's Prayer, there's one person in that room saying the Lord's Prayer. I say it to hell with them. I'm a little out of sync. I say it loudly so the people on either side of me can hear it too. That's my path. But it's not easy being a missionary. If you hear any people tell you not to, the Lord's Prayer is too Christian, that's baloney. It's been used by everybody in the world. My home group meets in a synagogue, you know that, in Los Angeles. Some of you don't know it. Big synagogue, big Jewish synagogue. Wednesday night, 1,000 people in the meeting, all up and ready to go. Some of you have been there. Once in a while, I see the rabbi come in the back, sit in the back row, wondering, how can I get this many people in here on Friday? But if we get up and say the Lord's Prayer, he gets up and says the Lord's Prayer. It doesn't affect the rabbi, but it affects some little snot who hasn't been to a synagogue in 5 years that hurts his feelings. Screw him. Take that off the tape, will you? I don't want people to think I'm not spiritually perfect.
So this is kind of the attitude I think that a lot of people have, at least where I was in AA. Again, you know, there's a lot of variability, and Clancy's definitely pretty extreme. But again, he's got a lot of people following him. It's, you know, the meeting he was referring to, I think that was the Pacific group he's referring to in that clip. And that's a meeting in California that has thousands of people every week. And there's a similar one on the Atlantic coast and a few others around the United States.
Yeah, one thing that stuck out to me was him saying the atheist and agnostic newcomers. If you've been there, then you get it. You believe in God and, you know, you do that. But the attitude that, like, well, if you're atheist, then you're a newcomer. Right. Like, you could, I mean, yeah. So it seems clear that guy doesn't really think, oh, you know, to each his own with these steps. Like, he seems pretty specifically religious with those steps.
He also believes that the big book is divine, that it was divinely inspired, and that it, along with the Bible, are the only two divinely inspired books.
Wow. That and the second Lord of the Rings book, not the other two.
The second what?
The second Lord of the Rings book, not the other two.
Yeah, just I was searching my brain to think of a Shakespeare example before you said one.
Yeah. And one of the Where's Waldo books. That's the only, I don't know which one, but those are the only divine books. That's crazy. So But again, just to sort of, I guess, represent, you know, all sides of it, you know, this isn't Mike's experience, right? I mean, you don't know this guy, or you don't?
Definitely not to, well, maybe that guy that just talked, I would say probably most folks that I'm acquainted with would be leaning towards that more than I'm comfortable with.
Okay.
But not to that extreme. I mean, I am pretty uncomfortable with just like moderate mainstream AA.
Yeah.
But not like so terribly offended by it.
Right. And you know, of course, the bottom line is if someone has a big problem and AA is helping them, I don't want to tell them to stop or anything. Sure. Like you got to do what you got to do.
I definitely like encourage. You know, like I don't. You know, like right now I'm helping my friend who's just getting sober. You know, just like taking him to meetings and stuff, and it's kind of like, you know, he's kind of getting involved in like a sponsor family, like we were talking about earlier, and you know, asking me questions about the fourth step and stuff like that. And I definitely don't want to. You know, I mean, like if it's worked for all these other people, then maybe it'll work for him. But, you know, I don't like spend any energy trying to convince him not to do what I don't think he shouldn't do.
Hmm. So what would you say? I mean, I'd ask both of you, but honestly, Danielle, you weren't an alcoholic, so you maybe wouldn't know. Like what do you think are the things we can take from AA if you were to sort of summarize, Mike, like, what can you take from it that you think works that has nothing to do with God? Or, I mean, because it does seem like you separate that. I mean, you just think.
Yeah. Well, as far as works, as far as like living a happy life or as in staying sober?
Well, I would think staying sober. I mean, if you're trying to, I don't think the purpose of AA would be to live a happy life, would it? I mean, if that's one of the stated purposes. Isn't that already overstepping kind of its boundaries that it should have? I mean,
that's a huge part is like living a happy, joyous life in sobriety is like,
okay. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely one of the selling points.
The second clip I have kind of goes with that as well.
We're on the third clip.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Well, let's play it. Let's do it. See, I think it's shorter.
If we're in a spiritual condition, we're going to see God in everyday things. We're going to see God all around us. We're going to see God in the funny things because I truly believe this, which is why I love to clap and yell and go to football games, you know, because when people score a touchdown, what do you do? What do you do? Show me what you do. Yay! Now, you know what that is?
Yay.
Okay, this is a physiological fact. You raise your arms up like this, your lungs expand, you give yourself some oxygen.
What if the other team scores?
It goes into your heart, goes up in your brain. It gives you some extra energy. But I also think that we're reaching to God. I think that when people get really excited, that's what they do. And I think we should be excited about the fact that God has filled that God-shaped hole in us. It's not like I'm like a woo-woo. I'm not woo-woo. I mean, I'm not one of these people that's woo-woo. I'm just not. I'm a bread-and-butter person. I'm a bread-and-butter God believer. Do you know what I mean? It's just like practical stuff. And our character defects are the things that block us off from feeling that enthusiasm of that God that's in there, that's in the God, that's filled in the God-shaped hole.
Wait, you didn't mention that there's a bread and butter God, because now I might be in.
Where do I sign up for that one?
Pretty big fan of bread and butter.
That was an AA clip? That wasn't like...
Yeah, this is my mom's grand sponsor, actually. Like this is, we would travel across the country every year to go hear her speak. And, I really looked up to this woman. I was, you know, this was one of, you know, she had like 45 years of sobriety and, you know, she was so happy and enthusiastic. And this was really a big, person that I looked up to.
Wow.
Yeah, she doesn't know shit about football. I mean, that's the first step. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so I'm trying to think, you know, what I want to say because, again, I don't know. What are your thoughts, Mike? Because I think Danielle's I mean, I think it's pretty clear, you know, your position, and I have a lot of respect for your position that, you know, there's, you had a terrible experience. Maybe it didn't seem like that the whole time, but a lot of the things you're telling me, I mean, that I would not want, you know, my family or anyone I knew involved in some of these things. Like, that's, it's pretty bad. On the other hand, there's an attitude you can take that sounds like Mike took, which is, you know, take out of it what you need, do what you can to get sober and use it to the extent you can. I don't know. I gotta say after hearing you guys talk, I mean, I'm pretty anti AA at this point, and I don't know if I'm using the right term. That's the right one, right? Just AA is the,
yeah,
it gets confusing.
12-step program,
right? 12-step
more generalize it.
Yeah, I don't know. I really think we got to do a little bit of reformation, especially when it comes to, you know, government recommending it and that stuff. So I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I think most places it's not recommended. Like, they can't recommend it. They have to say, you know, a 12-step group or an alternative. And it's just that there aren't that many alternatives, yeah. So you're pretty much forced to go to one anyway.
Like Mike said, even in an area where there's a ton of AA.
There's a million, and there's like two non-AA.
Right.
I can't imagine what it's like in, like, you know, some rural southern town or something.
And maybe that, you know, if those non-religious kind of, you know, if those non-AA groups have a couple guys or girls that you don't really, you know, you're not really into, you have like no selection. It's like if you go to a group and you don't like it, it's like, geez, okay, well, there's one other group I can check out.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, and my mom, you know, she's an alcoholic or she's in AA, so she's, you know, been sober for like 20 years, but she works for the government as an alcohol and drug counselor, and I know that she, you know, as often as she can, she pushes people into 12-step programs.
Yeah, well, there is, I mean, one other thing that's kind of, I would say, pro or whatever, is that there is like some statistical evidence that being involved in groups is helpful to some degree as far as your chances of staying sober.
Yeah, sure. Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Because I found this article in The Atlantic called The Surprising Failures of 12 Steps. Uh-huh. And there's actually quite a lot of articles that came out around the time that I first was looking into doing this. I was really slow. That was months ago, as Danielle knows. Mm-hmm. And well, you too, Mike. But yeah, we've been talking about this for a while off and on. But I kept an eye out for, like, you know, AA-related stuff in the meantime. There are several articles, and one of them says, peer-reviewed studies peg the success rate of AA somewhere between 5% and 10%, and it's like, I guess we need to check those peer-reviewed studies. Well, that sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I've been researching it for years. And,
oh, good. Let us know what you found.
A whole lot of conflicting reports.
Hmm.
But I think the general consensus is there is a correlation between getting involved in a group to some degree. And I think really just like having somebody to talk to about it and having support increases your chances somewhat, but it's not a whole lot. And it's as far as, like, you know, I guess you can't really do a study on like who did the steps and stayed sober, you know?
Yeah. Well, also there's some amount of self-selection going on there, right? Because
you kind of
have to volunteer to, when you're going to a group, you have at least a will to.
Yeah, that's to another thing. Is like, is it? It's probably people that are more serious about it are more likely to go to groups just to, you know, try to do everything they can.
Yeah.
But yeah, from the studies, there really isn't a whole lot of evidence that it increases, you know, your chances of sobriety. I would say it's more about what you want to do for yourself. You know, if you want to be involved in that community, because there are a lot of perks, you know, like socially. I definitely, you know, getting sober at 21, I felt like, you know, very alone a lot of the time because all my friends were still partying and whatnot. And I felt like, you know, I was like the only sober person in the world. So, like, you know, finding friends in it was kind of important.
And, yeah, well, a group, of course. I mean, I think any sort of group and support helps people. And I guess, like I said before, it may just be a question of, you know, if we can get the SOS or other organizations like that to be bigger, Right. You know, that'll be a good alternative to
it. Yeah, that's probably something I should be doing, you know. Like, I feel
I wasn't going to say it, but I'm putting you – okay. You got to do this, Mike. It's all on you.
Home group. Like, I think my home group's pretty good for the most part. But, yeah, in all reality, if I at some point I probably should, you know –
No, well, it sounds like you're doing a good thing. I mean, it sounds like you're being a good resource to people.
Yeah, I don't feel bad about it. You know, like
good. I didn't want you to feel like I was trying to, you know, criticize you or anything. No, I think that's great because you know you have to deal with the reality of the situation, and until there are other groups and there's nowhere else to go, it is good that you're there, Mike, like helping people who might be more atheist. That's great. But yeah, it's crazy to learn all this. I hope they're, you know, I hope everyone else, you know, listening learned as much as I did, because it just, I thought of AA as a completely different thing before I started looking into it.
Yeah. Well, you showed me, what the Bible is actually like, so I appreciate that. There is a, Brian, do you ever listen to Skeptoid, that podcast?
I haven't.
Really? It's so good.
I don't have a lot of time for podcasts now that I make like 12 of them, but
yeah, it's a short one.
Oh, okay.
And plus your drinking problem.
Yeah. Well, yeah. All my free time is going into trying my hardest to develop. Yeah.
Reading the Bible. But they're only 10 minutes long, but Brian Dunning, did an episode on 12 steps coincidentally this week. You should check out.
Oh, well, shit. Yeah. All right. I'm throwing this whole thing out.
I was kind of shocked that you hadn't heard that this week.
That is really bizarre. So
honestly, you will love it, I bet you.
Okay, I will check it out. Episode,
just like bunk stuff. It's great.
That is really a coincidence that I finally got around to doing this episode that's been like 6 months in the works. You know, 3 or 4 months in the works, and then just happens to be.
Is it a coincidence or is it God?
Or is it that Danielle listen to that, and then that's what prompted her to remind me to get off my ass and do this. Is that it?
I didn't hear it.
Oh, okay. So it's God.
Yeah,
okay, we've concluded. Well, I mean, there's tons more we could talk about. Do you guys have any more closing thoughts? I'm curious.
Do you mind if we end with the Lord's Prayer?
I'm good. Yeah, I end every episode with the Lord's Prayer. Come on. You've been skipping. You've been fast forwarding.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it.
So work it, you're worth it.
Yeah.
So you're
for Alateen, it was, and it sucks if you don't.
They're trying to be like hip.
Rad cool. It's like the Bill and Ted version.
Oh, man. So funny.
It's made me write the 12 steps to be like all.
Yeah. We admit that alcohol is totally bogus. And our lives are really not rad.
There definitely were a lot of
big guy in the sky.
There definitely were a lot of Alateen groups, not directly
more
nearby.
Alateen, please. That was another one of them.
That would play off of that, and they would have like dances and stuff, and basically just kind of really promote it to try to get all the kids to come.
Why do they call it Alateen? Why don't they call it Roundteen? Anyway, sorry. More Ovaltine jokes. Oh, okay. That was a Seinfeld quote. Someone out there got it and laughed, I'm sure. And then that's everyone else was.
I'm sure someone got it.
Yeah. Everyone else was just like thinks less of me now in my podcast. So it was worth it for that one guy. All right, so that was all we had time for. Thanks so much for coming on, you guys. I really enjoyed this.
Sure, thank
you. No problem.
And good luck staying sober, Danielle. You could fall off that wagon at any minute, not having.
I could. Yeah.
Is it time to call your sponsor?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
I'll be your new sponsor. Just give me a call anytime. Actually, call me on the same day. Yeah. Let's do this same 2-hour meeting every day, where we'll all three talk about it. And yeah, if you miss it by a minute, Danielle, then I'm going to be pissed. All right. Thanks a lot. And I'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. That's all of the interview. And I want to thank Mike and Danielle again. They were both great. Mike, of course, is at Digression Sessions, so be sure to check that out. Danielle just hasn't gotten off her ass to start a comedy podcast like Mike. So, you know, as soon as she does that, I'll plug it. No, Danielle's a listener. Actually, they both are. But anyway, I've been on digression sessions before, but I digress. No, that was really great. Really informative. There's so much stuff. I had no idea some of the things that they both told me about AA, and it's definitely changed my perspective on it. So now's that time where I got to thank my patrons. So new patron, yay, new patron this week, Tom Davis. Thank you so much, sir, or madam. No, just probably sir. Thanks for the pledge. And of course, as always, Jonathan Moyer, Havard S, John P, Bangs Naughty Bits, Jiro 1369, Dale, Cincy Farmer, Jeremy Sharp, Jim, Matt Garrett. Thank you guys so much from the bottom of my lower intestine. It doesn't sound great. That doesn't, you know, I know normally it's the bottom of your heart, but the lower intestine is lower than the heart. So if the bottom part of the heart is good, like lower in the heart is good, like surely below the heart has got to be even, I take it back. Thank you from the midpoint of my quad muscle. That's how much it means. So thank you guys. It really means a lot. And that's it. This is a really long episode, so I should just end. I will see you guys next week, and I cannot wait. I'll see you guys then.